Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's good to see you all. And I'd like to ask you, please, if you don't mind, to turn off your cell phones. Also, I'd like to thank the sponsor for the Shear. The Shearim for 2024 have been sponsored anonymously by an anonymous donor, obviously. Le'ilu Nishmois Brana Bas Branded and Zeli Ben Kalman, Zichronam Livrocha. We're very grateful for that. Now, one of the things that, I don't know how good your memories are, but I think I promised you last year before Shavuos, which we never got around to, maybe it was 2 years ago, is we would have a shear dealing with issues of dairy on Shavuos. We've never done this before. I don't think it's the most important topic in the world, I agree, but it's one that's always interested me, and the more when I looked into it, I think we'll find that what's going on below the surface is something even more interesting, which is not just a relationship with milky foods, dairy foods, but a relationship with the mitzvah of basar v'chalav. And there are sources that we're going to see which are quite surprising, which underpin what seems like a very innocuous mitzvah, one that makes a lot of money for tznuva, I suspect, which I don't begrudge them at all. I mean, good luck to them. But nevertheless, we'll see that it actually brings in the concept of minhag as well. What is minhag? How does minhag work? And maybe we'll, after Shavuos, we'll spend a little bit of time refocusing on that issue of minhag, which we haven't talked about for a long time, not this one specifically, but other ones. So, as you well know, there are widespread customs to eat milky on Shavuos. I'm not really part of this. I'm lactose intolerant, like most of the world is lactose intolerant, but we'll get back to that in a minute. Some people have a milky meal in the evening and a meat in the morning. This, I brought you, was a minhag of many of the Rosh Yeshiva, the Chazanish, the Stipe Lagon, Rav Aaron Kotel, and others, was to have milk at night, meat at lunch. Others do it the other way around. The minhag in the yeshivas in Europe, in Volozhin, they used to have a milchik kiddush on Shavuos morning at the Netziv's house in Lomje in the yeshiva. They used to have a milchik kiddush, and they used to have meat meals. That's the minhag, many Hasidim do that. As for the issue of eating meat on Yontzef, this is not really the focus for today, but it's really not that complicated. Everybody agrees that there is a mitzvah, specifically for men, I'd say, but maybe for everybody, to eat meat on Yontzef. But there's not necessarily an obligation to eat meat on Yontzef. And even though there is a mitzvah, we'll see that the minhag can often override the ideal performance of the mitzvah and make the less ideal one into a more lechatchila option. We'll see that system in work in a minute. So, okay, let's look at the earliest origins. Now, what's actually very interesting here is that this seems to be an Ashkenazi medieval minhag. There is no hint in the Torah, well, that's not true, there are hints. There is no explicit reference in the Torah for anything to do with milchik on Shavuot. I mean, there's no explicit reference in the Torah that Shavuot, the festival of Shavuot, is the time that the Torah was given. It's not called Zman Matan Torah Seinu by the Torah, it's called that by Chazal. That's a different shir, and there's a lot to say about that. And there's no reference in Chazal either. In the writings of the Talmud and the Midrashim, there's no reference to eating dairy foods on Shavuos. It really starts in the 11th, 12th centuries in Ashkenaz. There could be a few reasons for that. So maybe the more prosaic reasons are that they had a lot of cattle, and the summer is the time when many of the calves are being weaned off the milk that they've been drinking. The calves are calving in March and April, and by June they're coming off the milk, and therefore there's just a lot of milk around. A lot of cows, a lot of goats, a lot of milk around. That could be one of the opportunities to give thanks for that. But also, and I can't prove this in any way, the genetic mutation which enabled people to be lactose tolerant was in Europe, not in the Middle East. 99% of Chinese people are lactose intolerant because almost all people are meant to be lactose intolerant, because all mammals are lactose intolerant. Once they have weaned off their mother's milk, they can't digest milk anymore. Why would they need to drink milk? It's a genetic mutation that human beings can drink milk, and Europe was the place where this mutation happened. Not in the time of the Rishonim, but before. So it could be that one of the reasons that the Ashkenazim got into eating cheese and drinking milk on Shavuos is because they were the ones that were able to digest it. I cannot prove that. That could be nonsense, but it's a thought that you may want to think about, and let me know if you feel that that's correct or not. But the actual recorded minhag, let's look at number one. Some of these sources are quite obscure, and I wasn't able to actually find the Hebrew for them. Some of them didn't appear, many of them didn't appear on my resources. But let's start with number one. My father saw, this is from the Rokeach. The Rokeach is a German Rishon from the 13th century, and he says as follows. My father saw regarding his uncle, so that's three generations back, or two from him, Rabbeinu Menachem, that on the holiday of Atzeret, Shavuos, he would eat cheese before meat. That's the point. He would have cheese, and then he would have meat, and he would wipe out his mouth with bread dipped in wine that he ate, and he didn't wait between them. Now that's really the key. That's what people don't realize. How much do you have to wait between milk and meat, or for that matter, between meat and milk? So the first testimony we have here is he ate milchiks. He did a brief wipe out of his mouth. It doesn't say whether he made a brocha achrona, and then he went on and he had his meat meal. So we're going to go back to that idea of meat or cheese. He had cheese here, which is interesting, because what kind of cheese was he eating? Was it hard cheese? Was it soft cheese? We're going to come back to that soon. But actually, one of the main minhagim that we see in the Rishonim is to eat honey on Shavuos. I don't know, do people still eat honey on Shavuos? Or honey has been pushed to Rosh Hashanah? Because honey on Shavuot, we'll see, was one of the big things. And it comes from a pasuk number two, Shir HaShirim. Nofet titofna siftotayich kala. That your lips, says Shir HaShirim, will drip honeycomb. And then here's the famous pasuk, dvash v'chalav tachat l'shonech. Dvash v'chalav. It's on Shavuos, it's not milk and honey, it's honey and milk. Dvash v'chalav tachat l'shonech. What's that got to do with Shavuot? So look at the Midrash, and this is already in the classic sources. Number three. Nofet titofna siftotayich kala, dvash v'chalav tachat l'shonech. Eimatai, when is this referring to? Beshah she'atoseket b'torah. When you're learning Torah, the Torah that's dripping from your lips is like honey and milk dripping from your lips. Davar acher, they quote this pasuk. It's beshah she'amdu lifnei ha-sinai. When they stood at Harsinai, v'amru kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh v'nishma. When they said those words, na'aseh v'nishma. That's the point at which Hashem, as it were, says to them, "Dvash v'chalav tachel l'shonech." Davar acher, alternatively, Amalem Hakadosh Baruch Hu, "Kach chavavtem et haTorah." You were so excited to get the Torah, Nasev Nishma, Chayechem, by your life, Shehi Netuna Lechem b'Matana. It's free. Ah, oh, the Jews are always in for a bargain. It's a free Torah. I'll take two: Torah Shebach Bichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. Okay, so. This dvash v'chalav is connected with Na'aseh v'nishma. And I actually saw a very interesting Dvar Torah from a good friend of mine, Rabbi Alan Haber. And he says, he suggests that dvash is a different kind of sweet to milk. Honey is a very kind of immediate high. It's a very striking sweetness. He says, there's one kind of love. It's the passionate love of Shir HaShirim between the lover and the beloved. And maybe that's Shavuot, which is the Na'aseh, this, like, we'll do it, we don't care what it is, we'll do it, we love you, we're in, we're committed. And then the Chalav is maybe the milk which is more nourishing. The sweetness is a different kind of sweetness. It's more the love between Ruth and Boaz. It's not a young people's passionate love. It's two older people doing the right thing, connecting with each other, because they forget they are both people who are, they're not young lovers, they're older people. And that's maybe the Nishma, which is that our relationship is not just going to be a passionate in the moment, but it's going to be a long-term nourishing relationship. It could be that's part of what's going on here. And I brought you a source in number four from a sefer that I hadn't really come across, called the Melamed HaTalmidim, which is, I brought you in the footnotes here who this is, Rav Yaakov Anatoli from Provence in the 13th century. And he says, even the practices that were innovated after the Torah come to complete this intent. He's talking about Minhag. Such as our practice on this holiday to eat honey and milk, in that order, to be mindful of the acceptance of the Torah, which is compared to milk and honey. Because it is known that milk is the food of children due to their delicate nature, and in parallel comes the Torah with active mitzvahs, which is the food for the soul of the many. And my wife said to me, actually, when I told her I was doing a shir about honey and milk, first she said, do you mean milk and honey? And I said, no, honey and milk. And she said, well, isn't milk and honey chalav udvash in the Torah? Is maybe not even milk and honey at all. Chalav may be white wine. We had a whole shir on milk a while ago. Could be that chalav is talking about white wine, because Israel is not so known for its milk, actually. There weren't even any cows. Today it is, because we have, you know... Correct, and we have high-tech cows here as well. Many years ago, the Israeli agriculture industry developed machines that mold themselves to the exact shape of the cow's udders. Normally, when you stick a machine on a cow, so it is what it is, and I'm sure it's not that pleasant. I've never been in that situation myself, but I imagine it's not that great, and the cow does what the cow does. But in Israel now, many of the cows have a chip. They have a computer chip. As they approach the machine, it adjusts the contours of the milking machine to fit the exact udders of the cow, and when the cow starts to give milk, it's that kind of like wonderful feeling, and therefore you get more milk, happy cows, etc. But chalav u'dvash in the Torah could be white wine and date honey. The dvash is date honey. This dvash is bee honey. It's honey. Go over the page to page two. The kolbo, and you know some of these are a little bit repetitive, but you'll see they all have a slightly different angle. The kolbo, and the kolbo is a collection of Ashkenazi minhagim put together by Rav Aaron ben Yaakov of Narbonne in 14th century Spain. Also wrote the Orchas Tzadikim as follows. Number five, gam nagu le'echol dvash v'chalav b'chag ha'Shavuot. We also eat milk, honey and milk on Shavuot, mipnei ha-Torah she-nimshala dvash v'chalav, because of the Torah which is compared to honey and milk, k'mo she-kasuv dvash v'chalav tachat l'shanech. So you see this is resonating through the Rishonim. I brought you in the footnote that the Orchas HaChaim, which was the other sefer written by the Kolbo, actually makes another mention, which is that the women used to bake challahs with four heads. We'll see what that's about in a minute. What's a challah with four heads? Because of the lechem apanim. We'll see what the connection is too, but we'll see what those challahs are coming quite soon. The Maram of Rottenburg, classic Ashkenazi Germany, 13th century, number six. Nagu le'echol bo kol mini ma'achalim atukim. We eat many sweet foods on Shavuos, not just honey, but kagoin chalav u'dvash, mishum dvash u'chalav tachat l'shonech v'nidrash al matan Torah. And even to the point where this was parodied, Colonimus ben Colonimus. Now again, I enjoyed researching this year because I got to meet lots of people that I didn't know very much. Who is Colonimus ben Colonimus? Colonimus ben Colonimus, I brought you in the footnote again, 13th, 14th century Provence, put together an enormous poem called the Even Bochen. And in poetry, he sets out lots of the minhagim at the time. And he writes there the number seven, the Jewish people craved after milk and honey like bears and lions. He who doesn't have milk and honey pawns his utensils for slices of cheese and fine flour. People are so into their cheese. So people say to me, oh, Tnuva made the whole thing up. Not true. It's not true. People used to be crazy about cheese. And by the way, they still are. My daughter found English cheddar cheese in Osher Ad in Petach Tikva, cheaper than she can buy it in England. And you should have seen our family WhatsApp group. It was almost as if, you know, the Moshe Mashiach was arriving. So people still get excited about cheese until they bake strange bread. Now, this is also connected with the idea that if you bake milchik bread, you need to make it into a strange shape. That's a halacha. That's why the berekas in this country are square if they're potato and triangle if they're cheese. Because there's a halacha that you have to make cheese. If you make milchik bread or pastries, they have to look different. Hence the four-headed challah we'll see, which was not just a challah, but was a challah baked with butter. It was a brioche. It was meaning we. If you weren't hungry when you came into this year, you'll be hungry when you leave. And on the strange bread, they have, and upon them, challahs of honey and cherries. Interesting. Cherry harvest in Israel right now as well. We had a lot of cherries last Shabbat. A ladder standing on the ground and its head reaching the heaven. And this is the four-headed challah, like a ladder. They baked, meaning I don't think there's any real source for Shlissel challah after Pesach, but there's a good source for Sulam challah. And they say that Sulam, a ladder, Sulam, in Gematria 130, is equivalent to Sinai, which it is. You can check that. And they also say that the number 613 hints at Dvash Chalav Kimcha Desmida, which is honey, milk, and fine flour, which in Gematria is 614. They said, except the Gematria is off by one. Now, I did actually research this a little bit because there is an idea I brought you in the footnotes, a B'nai Yisascha, that says the source as to one of the sources that you can have Gematria off by one is because Yaakov says that Ephraim and Manasseh will be to me the equivalent of Reuven and Shimon. And I must confess, I didn't have time to check, but apparently Ephraim and Manasseh are the same as Reuven and Shimon, except they're just off by one. Ephraim and Manasseh is 726, and Reuben and Shimon is 725. Again, please check it. I didn't. But that, apparently that's where this idea comes from, that if you're off by one, or one of the reasons, maybe there are deeper reasons. What's actually under the surface, which is not for today specifically, but one of the other things that the Evin Bochen is famous, maybe infamous for, is in the middle of his massive poem, he has a couple of stanzas about how he wishes he'd been born a woman. And he writes that he says to God every day that he's a man anatomically, but he wishes it could be taken away. And every morning when he says, Shalom Yisani Isha, he says it with a whisper because he feels that for him which is fascinating. Is that a parody on some kind? Is that true? Is that how he felt? You can go away and research that. If you Google that, you'll get some interesting hits, by the way. But I'm just saying that, what's that? I don't believe he does. I brought you a reference. There's a beautiful book, actually, by a fellow called Peter Cole. I heard about him on a podcast, who translated into English he's a literature person, in very beautiful English, many of the medieval poems that weren't translated. A lot of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, Shlomo Ibn Gvirol, and he translates this one. It's a book called The Dream of the Poem. You can look at that, and if you like reading nice poetry, which is also medieval Hebrew poetry translated well, so that's an example. Okay, I'll let me leave that aside. This issue of whether he wanted or didn't want to be a woman. The idea of honey is still mentioned in the Mishnah Berurah. He says some people still have honey, but I don't think they do anymore. But we might have some honey on Shavuos just to say that we're part of that minhag. However, what's even more interesting, I think, is number 8. Because there was another minhag, which we'll see connects with Shavuos, which we also don't do now, which I think is making a little bit of a comeback in Hasidish circles, which is as follows. Look at number 8. And I brought this from the Machzor Vitri. The Machzor Vitri is a very old, very authentic Ashkenazi record from Rav Simcha of Vitri of minhagim of Ashkenaz from the 11th, 12th centuries from the time of Rashi. Having said which, there are different manuscripts of the Machzor Vitri and they don't all have the same nusach, and we'll see, you can still get the footnotes for that. But look at number 8. Kasha Adam Machnes es Benoy LaTalmud, when a person was bringing his son into learning Torah, the Talmud Torah. Kaisvim lo es ha'oisvis aluach. They write down the letters Aleph Beis for a small child, we're talking about 4, 3, 4, on a luach, on a tablet. And they give him a proper wash, and they dress him up in beautiful clothes, clean clothes. The lashen lo gimel challah shel solis petvash, and they cook him 3 challahs of fine flour and honey challahs. Ubetula lasha et ha'isa, and a young woman, we'll see why in a minute, has to make these challahs. Umevashlin lo gimel beitzim, and they make him 3 eggs. We bring him apples, mine peiros. By the way, tapuchim is lavdafka apples. Tapuchim can be the word for any round fruit. That's why in Hebrew, and by the way in many other languages, tapuach adama, pomme de terre, erd apfel, tapuach zahav. There's no word for an orange, it's just a golden apple, tapuz, etc. Anyway, we bring him fine fruits. Umine peiros umachzirim ata achacham. We find a chacham, the chashuv, an important chacham, laholicha lebet sefer, and he brings him wrapped up to the school. Umachsehu tachas knafav, and they put him under his wing, as it were. Malehu lebet haknesses, they carry him wrapped up in the blankets to the bet haknesset. Umachilim oiso chalos bedvash, they give him the beautiful chalas with honey. Umin abeitzim, they feed him the eggs. Vahaperos, it's always food. Jews have always connected to their kids with food. Umakrim loisa oisius, and they make him read the letters. The achakach mechapim oisa bedvash, and they cover the luach with honey. The omrim lo lchoch, and they say to him, lick. By the way, it's quite possible that the origin of the Yiddish word lekach, which when I was growing up, lekach was always honey cake, is lekach, it's to lick. Okay? It could be that's the origin. Okay, the same lchoch. And they wrap him up again and they send him back to his mother. So when you initially start learning with a kid, you give him incentivizations. But then you have to give him a bit of a stick as well to get him to actually buckle down. We're getting into that now. And you start him off with Vayikra. It's very interesting. And you teach him how to shuckle. So interesting. You teach him how to shockle, kashehelomid. I just found this was, I just wanted to read this piece out in full because it was, and by the way, it's not full because a lot of it I took out. But let's have a look at why. Why all these strange minhagim? Da, shedoyme ha'inyan ki'ilu hikrivu lifnei ha'sinai. Because basically it's as if we brought this child to Har Sinai. Kamina gazel iksoysev alaloso. So we wrap him up and we lift him up. Shekein matzinu b'moshe she'asa k'seide hazel Yisrael. Because that's what we saw with the Jewish people at Sinai. D'chsiv v'yotzi Moshe es'am. Moshe brings the people, likras elokim, min ha'machane v'yatzvu b'tachti tzahar. And he covers them up with the mountain. They're kind of swaddled in the mountain. V'nir ki'ilu hei mechusim tachas ahar, k'shehichnisem l'kabal ha'Torah. U'mipnei ma k'osim lo ala oisis ala luach. Why do we write the letters on a tablet, not just on a piece of paper? V'lo al davar acher. Lefisha lev yesh luach, because your heart is like a tablet. D'chsev, as it says in Mishlei, kasveim al luach libecha. Write them on the tablets of your heart. K'loyma shetzehi kavua al luach libecha. They're fixed in your mind. V'lama marchitzim u'malbishim oisa begadim nikim. Why do we wash him and dress him up so nicely? K'derech matan Torah, just like they did at Sinai at Torah when they gave up the Torah. V'kidashtim ayom u'machal v'chipsusim loisam. They have to dress up beautifully for matan Torah. V'lama ba'im gimel chalas. Why three chalas? Three chalas, three eggs. Okay? U'machilim oto. Why? Zeichel l'shloisha idunim shenis adnu b'hem Yisrael. They got these three beautiful gifts in the desert. Ve'eluhem, these are there. These are the ones, the be'er, the man, and the slav. Ve'lama lashim ha'choles b'chalav u'dvash. And why do we make the chalas with milk? Again, milchik chalas. They make the chalas with milk. Mishum sh'ne'emah v'yinakeinu dvash v'esalai. They suckled honey from the rock. Umein mikra shel psichas alei. Fine. Shenema dvash v'chalav tachas l'shoneh. V'lama ein menichin lalush et ha'isa ela lebetula. Why do we give it to a young girl? This is actually fascinating to need the challah. Shematzinu shehikpidu Torah b'nisinasa, that when the Torah was given, they were particular. The poletet shichvat serah. They didn't want anybody to be tamei from having had a sexual relationship, so we dafka give it to a young girl who has never been married. These are all resonants of the minhagim of Sinai. V'hayu nechoyim liyom ha'shlishi. U'lekach amru tavo betula shehi tahora, maybe even a girl before puberty who is not even a nida, but talush lekatan shehu tor, and she should make chalas for the little boy. By the way, it was quite common in some circles up until the Middle Ages that people ate their regular food as if it was tahor, like truma or kodshim, meaning they wouldn't have anyone who was not tahor in halacha touch the food. That's just an interesting side issue. And then he says, "V'kol kach lama she'd kaim l'doyres ki'ini shenema." We want everybody to do this, to learn Torah, etc. V'lama hachacham mechase ato tachas knafav. Why does the chacham lift him up? L'fi shemachnichim shemachnichim oisoy derech tznias, because we want to give him chinuch in a way which is tsanua. That's why he's wrapped up. V'derech anava, and humble. Shekein matzinu b'nesina satorah. What do we find when the Torah was given? I love this Tvar Torah, especially since I just wrote a book about sneers. Okay. Shelo la'asoyse alilu pumbi. We don't want to do things too publicly. La'ovri drachim, so everyone can see them. Shelo yishlo bo shum ayin ra. We don't want ayin hara on things. Al shum nezik. We don't want people to damage them. Shekein b'nesina satorah l'fi sheluchas arishonis. This very famous vort. The original luchos, nitnu b'pumbi, were given in great pomp and circumstance, pumpi v'gadol v'koyles brachim v'kol shofar, horns blowing, lights flashing, sonne lumiere. V'nitkanu amalachim, and the angels became jealous, and we'll come back to the angels soon. Uba satan, and then there was a satan, it's interesting linking these two ideas. V'arves ha'olam v'garam ha'avon shenishtabru luchas, and he caused everybody to go off, and the luchas were destroyed. Aval luchas achrono shenitnu b'chashai, but the second luchas was given very quietly. Hein kimim lo'olam, they are the ones that lasted forever. L'fikach masir nasoy le'imoy af me'chuseh. And here's a nice thing at the end, you can remember this as to what to say to a young boy when he starts learning. V'hanene misudaso, and if you go to that meal for that little boy who's licking off the honey, chayav levarachoy, you have to give him a special bracha. The loima, what do you say? Hamokam ya'ir einecha b'torato. God may light up your eyes in His Torah. Kederech shemavarchin osay b'kabalas mila, just like we say when he gets his mila. Kashem shenichnas lebris kein yikanes l'torah l'chupa l'masim tovim. Now, if you want, by the way, to see a very beautiful rendition, production of that, go to Rabbi Wein's Rashi movie. Do you remember Rabbi Wein's Rashi movie?
No.
1990s experience. In the 1990s, Rabbi Beryl Wine wrote, made a beautiful animated movie about the life of Rashi. And it won awards, like real awards, not like Jewish awards, but like animation, best original soundtrack. It was beautifully done. They used period instruments from the high Middle Ages. They wrote an original soundtrack. And they even took the face of Rashi, they morphed it from three descendants of Rashi. I think it was Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and one other, I can't remember who it was. Anyway, you should definitely watch the movie. It's on YouTube, you can just Google it. It's called Rashi, A Light After the Dark Ages. It's about 45 minutes. You'll have a better day if you watch that movie, and you'll daven a nicer mincha afterwards. And I brought you at minute 36:33, he has a 5 minute or 4 or 5 minute rendition of this ceremony, which he reproduces. It's in the footnotes. A Light After the Dark Ages. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring you this. I remembered in my mind that I'd seen this somewhere. I remembered it was the Rashi movie. I found the minute of the movie, and that you should go and have a look at that. That Rashi movie, by the way, is very interesting because Rabbi Wein, as a Talmud Chacham, wrote the script and puts into Rashi's mouth lots of the things that he's thinking about and talking about. One of the scenes in that Rashi movie is where Rashi only had daughters, obviously. He had either two daughters or three daughters. He brings down the daughters there, and he's learning Gemara with the daughters. Now, we know that Rashi's daughters were Talmidot Chachamim. We know that they didn't wear tefillin. That's just fake news. But he has them learning Gemara with their father. And they ask him in the middle of that scene, they say, Dad or Abba, I can't remember what they use, Père, Mon Père, if you'd had sons, would you still have taught us Torah on this level? And Rashi looks at them and says, you know, I don't know. That's a good question. That's Rabbi Wein's comment on women learning Gemara, which is, I think, very interesting. So whatever. So I brought you that so you could see that there was the whole honey and milk and milchik challah. What's that got to do with us? Look in number 9. The Rokeach, very quickly, the Rokeach picks up this minhag, and he says, number 9, Minhag avosenu shemoshivin hatinoikos lilmoid b'shvuas. Which day did they do this with a little boy? They did it on Shavuos. Lefi shenitna boya Torah, remesh shemachasim, hanar, sheloy. And he brings all the different minhagim that we saw. I cut them all out. I didn't want to read them all again. He also brings another one there that they used to write. They used to take an egg, hard boil it. Maybe these were the three eggs that the Maksovitru was talking about. Shell it and then write on the egg, on the white of the egg, a posuk. Used to write a posuk on the egg. And they used to write the posuk from Yecheskel. I brought you in the middle there. Ve'yomer ai ben Adam, bitnecha te'achel umayach timalei. Eat up this Torah. Eat up this Megillah. Et ha-Megillah hazot, hasha ani notin alecha. Eat up the Megillah, he says to Yecheskel. Ve'ochlem te'hipapit kadvash umatok. And it'll be so much part of you, it'll be like honey coming out of your mouth. And they mamash got the little egg. They wrote on it the posuk. They got the kid to eat the posuk. It's like very, very interesting. And where exactly these minhagim went, that's a good question. In fact, there are some people that have tried to bring this back at the obshirin. There's some chassidim at the obshirin. They do this with the kid, with the licking, etc. But the old litvaks amongst us still are resistant to doing an obshirin bichlal because, it's funny, My own children, we're from a Litvish background. We didn't do an option for our son. So my son, who's very much part of that, you know, he hasn't had a little boy yet, so we'll have to see. But I don't think he's going to do an option if he has one. But my daughter, who married an Israeli, also Litvish but Israeli, she didn't do an option. But for some reason, they never cut his hair until he was 3. And she kept telling me, he's not growing his hair for an option day. He's not. He just happened to have a haircut when he was 3. Okay, fine. But maybe they did. Now, enough of that. Now we have to go to Fluden. Do you remember Fluden? Fluden? Kenny, a Fluden person? So what's Fluden? Fluden is a kind of cake, but it's a very special kind of cake. Now, I remember, I haven't had it since I made Aliyah, but Fluden we used to have was more like apple in the middle and chocolate on top. But for the Rishonim, Fluden was highly resonant. It was resonant of Milchiks and Shavuos. Have a look here, number 10. Says the... here, this Rav Avigdor Tzarfati, also quite obscure to me anyway, one of the Peirushim on the Torah, and I put down in the footnotes here who he was, one of the Baalei HaTosfos, he says as follows, number 10. The world asks why we eat bluden, or bladen, a cheese pastry on Shavuos, and it seems that there's a hint in the Torah. What's the hint in the Torah? Here's a posuk about Shavuos. Uveyom habikurim, behakrivchem mincha, Chadasha la Hashem b'shvuaseichem. Chet Lamed Bet Shavuos. Chalav Shavuos. This is an abbreviation of milk and Shavuos. But why Fluden? I don't know, he says. What's it got to do with Fluden? But now you'll see. Rav Yaakov Merlin, again, very the Maharil, very important for Ashkenazi Minag number 11. It is, if it's on the Yontzer for Shavuos, for then it's the custom that they make a large Fladen, which is Fluden, and they call it Sinai. An enormous cake that they used to bring in, a big Fluden cake, which they used to call Sinai, again, a milchig cake. Number 12, B'Shavuos Oichlin Chalav. This is the Sefer Minhagim, again, one of the less known Rishonim. B'Shavuos Oichlin Chalav, V'Zecher Remez Latami Torah Shneemar, and he brings his Pasuk, Mincha Rasha LaHashem B'Shavuos Seichem, Rosh Yitzevus Chalav, V'Tzarech La'echol Gam Basa. But you have to remember to have Fleishiks, Ki Ein Simcha B'Loi Basa. Because you have to have Fleishiks on Yontzef. But people didn't want to give up on their Fluden, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Number 13, the Leket Yosher, he brings as follows. 15th century, Bavaria. B'yom Rishon Shel Shavuos, on the first day of Shavuos, Oichel Fluden, you have to eat Fluden. V'dagim hamatuganim b'chema. And you have to have fried fish, fried in butter. I don't recall whether my grandmother ever fried anything in butter. She seemed to make everything with schmaltz, obviously not milchiks, but everything was schmaltz. There were schmaltz coming out of the walls, it seems. Dagim fried with butter. V'achakach haya oise hadacha, but then you give it wash up your liyadov, you wash up your mouth, you wash your hands, or lepiv. And you put your fingers in your mouth to give your mouth a good wipe out. I'm not recommending this necessarily for hygiene purposes. And then you have a bit of bread or something, and then you have to have your meat. But very interesting, what didn't happen, they didn't wait. There's no brocha and there's no waiting. They just had this beautiful fluden, and they had the fried fish in butter. Then they gave the mouth out a wash, and they gave it a little. They flossed a little bit with their finger, if that's what you do. And then they immediately had basar. And what actually, where that comes into the Shulchan Aruch, is in a minhag that we once did in our house, but it was a bit of a balagan, and therefore we didn't do it again, which is the minhag the Ramah brings down. Why are we doing all this milchik on Yontzef? And he says, really what it's for is to engineer a situation of shtei halechem. The Shtei HaLechem is the special korban on Shavuos. Look at number 14. U'sfartim lachem mimacharat ha-shabbat. Some people think that verse ends hinene muchon ha-mezumen, but it doesn't. Okay. U'sfartim lachem mimacharat ha-shabbat. Miyam haviyachem et oimer tnufa. You count from bringing the omer, which is barley, on Pesach. Sheva Shabbos ois tmimos tiyena, 7 complete weeks. Ad bimarchash ha-shabbos, until the day after the Shabbos HaShviyis is the 7th week. Tisperu chamishim yom, you count 50 days. V'hikrata mincha chadash al Hashem. You bring a new mincha. Mimoshvoseichim tevienu lechem. You have to bring it from Eretz Yisrael. Tnufa, lechem tnufa. You have to, it's a waved offering. Shtaim, there's 2 loaves of bread. Shnei esrim sole tiyena chametz ta'afena. You have to bake them as chametz bikurim lashem. And they're called bikurim. And therefore, the resonance on Shavuos is the Shtei HaLechem. What are we doing on Shavuos to put this Shtei HaLechem into our minds? And the answer is eating milchiks. Why? Here's the Shulchan Aruch, number 15. V'noyagim b'kama makomis. The minhag, says the Ramah, in many places, is le'echol ma'achali chalav b'yom rishon shel Shavuos. We eat milchiks on the first day of Shavuos. V'nira li hatam, and I want to suggest the reason is shehu kamoi ha'shnei tavshilin sheloichim b'leil ha'pesach. It's like the 2 cooked dishes on the plate on Pesach Seder night. Zeichel Pesach and Zeichel Chagiga. We have these 2 bones, or whatever we have, a roast egg and a bone, Zeichel Korbanot. Kein oichlim machal chalav, so too we eat milchiks. V'achakav machal basar, and then we eat fleishiks. V'tzrichim lahavi imahem beit lechem, therefore we have to bring a new challah. Al hashulchan, we have to bring a new challah to the table. Shehu b'mokam ha-mizbeach. The table is the mizbeach. And now that we've made hamotzi with 2 challahs for the milchik side, and now what we do is we eat fleishiks, we have to bring a new challah. Why do we have to bring a new challah? Because the first challah is milchik. Why is the first challah milchik? because you either because you ate the slices with milk, and there's a halacha, you can't, if you have sliced bread, you can't go from one basa to chala the other way around. Or we'll see in the Mishnah Berurah, the chala is milchik because they baked the chala milchik. That's the whole point. They baked it milchik, and therefore now you bring a fresh chala, a new chala for the fleishiks. The yesh bezeh zikaron lebeis alechem shai makrivim yom kippurim and below yom bikurim. Excuse me. And I brought a few selected Mishnah Berurahs here. If you look in number 16, let me pick out the one I wanted to read with you. Look at Tedvav, Beit Lechem, it says. Olechein, in the third, fourth line of number 16. Olechein nagu lafod lechem echad im chema. And dafke, we have to bake the challah with butter. It's like patisserie. Da az bevadai yitztarek lahavi lechem acher lechol im basar. What about benching? You bench in between them. And here he says something interesting. Ala Shulchan in Tzed Zayin here, he says, Viza likach mapa acheret, you have to change the cloth, because you're returning le'echol basa when you move on to the fleishiks. The einot sarach lahafsik bebrikas amozen. But you don't actually have to bench. And that is quite strange. Im einot oichel gvina, that's as long as you didn't eat gvina kasha. If you ate hard cheese, if you ate hard cheese, then you might have to wait, obviously, depending on how long you wait for meat. But he says, as long as you didn't eat cheese, you have milchiks, clean your mouth, change the tablecloth, wash your hands, bring out a new challah. Obviously, you don't need to make hamotzi again. And then you have fleishiks. But what you've basically just done is had milchiks and fleishiks in one meal, which is something that we just don't do. But because it's shavuos, it seems that we do. And you'll see here there is a series of unusual leniencies that crept into Shavuos for an interesting reason that we'll find out about. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah is so worried about this, he says in the last bit of the Mishnah Berurah, he says, Zikaron lebeis alechem, ve'im kein yeh shel chitin, you should make sure you have wheat bread on Shavuos, by the way. If you happen to like spelt or oat bread, Shavuos is maybe a day to go for the wheat bread. But then he brings the prima ganim. But don't start taking liberties. Don't start being lenient in a way that you're not during the meal, even though he said not to bench. Because then you'll lose more than you gain, because you'll end up playing fast and loose with milchiks and fleishiks. Now, where else do we find this? So we don't really have these shilas today because we don't milk our cows on Yom Tov. I actually asked my great-grandmother, who grew up in a shtetl in Lithuania, what her first memory was when she was a small child. And she said her first memory was when she asked her mother for some milk, and she took her outside and they milked the cow into a cup, and she gave her the milk from the cow, which is very interesting. Of course, it wasn't pasteurized, but she still made it to 97 years old, Baruch Hashem. But it's interesting. I also asked her, you know, what other memories she has. She says, I remember my father died when I was young, and I went to shul to say Kaddish. Drops his cup in amazement. That was like, whoa. whoa. I didn't expect that reaction. So I said to her, she was already very old, and I said, you mean Yiska? She said to me, no, I mean Kaddish. And I looked at my wife and I said, look, she's already like a bit forgetful. She was in her mid-90s. And later I spoke to one of my colleagues, Rabbi Yitzchak Shurin, whose father came from the same village, Ritava, in Lithuania, and it was well known that the women said Kaddish. That was a thing that was known in Ritava. The women said Kaddish. They need to say Kaddish. So I guess my great-grandmother had more lucidity than I gave her at the time. So what else did they do? So look at number 17. What if you need milk on Yom Tov? Can you milk the cow on Yom Tov? The answer is no, you can't milk a cow on Yom Tov. Can you get the non-Jewish maid or servant or whatever to milk the cow on Yom Tov? Look at number 17. The Eina Yehudi, a non-Jew, Hachoylev Behema B'Yontif, who milks a cow on Yontif, V'Yisrael Ro'ehu, and it's Chal of Yisrael because you're supervising the milk. Yesh Lahakel, there are lenient opinions, Achnagu Bo'issa, but we don't follow them, V'Ein Lashonos, and don't change that. We don't drink milk on first day Yontif if the non-Jew milked it on Yontif. You could drink it on second day Yontif, but you can't drink it on first day Yontif. And you certainly can't drink it if it was milked on Shabbos. So comes along the Maharshal of Shlomo Luria, who, in my limited experience, tends to be quite a machmir on many things, even on milk and meat. For example, the Ramah brings down, how long do Ashkenazim wait between milk and meat? And he says, originally we didn't used to wait at all, we just used to have it in a different meal. And then we used to wait 1 hour, and now it's good to be machmir, to wait 6 hours. And the Maharshal said, everybody has to wait 6 hours. If you don't wait 6 hours, this is one of the reasons why Ashkenazim are always down on people like me who wait 3 hours, and they, you know, they kind of give me grief and they say there's no source. And the Maharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, says if you don't wait 6 hours, you don't have any reich of Torah, etc. I've taken a lot of heat for keeping 3 hours. Okay, I'm a Western European, I keep 3 hours, but here the Maharshal has a very interesting shaila. Number 18. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but look at the way he phrases it. Shaila. Here's the question. Chalav shechalva goya b'Shabbos, chalav which was milked by the milkmaid on Shabbos, or b'Yontzef, or on Yontzef, ishari la'asois mimeno fluden. I've got to have my fluden. That's what he says. B'chag ha'Shavuos or lo. And just the way it's not like if they happen to make, you don't take a Jew away from his fluden on Shavuos. It's a big thing. And he goes through back and forth and back and forth. And eventually, you know, he says, you know something? Shabbos, definitely not. But Yontef, you can be mekel. You've got to have your fluden. You can be mekel. The non-Jew can milk the cow and you can eat the fluden. Very interesting. Of course, they baked it on Yontef because you can bake on Yontef. That's not a shaila, but he brings that down. You can read the shaila in your own time. This caused something of a stir. We'll see in a minute where that comes from. But let's look at a couple of other sources before we get into, I want to tell you 16 different reasons why, 17, excuse me, why maybe we actually eat milchiks on Shavuos other than what we've seen. But let's have a look at the Shlo. The Shlo, Shnei Luchot HaBrit, he was living in Eretz Yisrael. He was originally, I think, Ashkenazi, the Shnei Luchot HaBrit. I think he was in Prague originally. But he's buried in Eretz Yisrael. Look at number 19. Ha'olam no'agil le'echol b'chag ha'Shavuos ma'chali chalav. People eat milchiks on Shavuos. Va'achakach oichlim basar. But then they eat meat. L'kaim v'samachta b'chagecha. Because they've got to fulfill the mitzvah simchas yontzef. Ve'ein simcha b'loy basar. Az tzarech ledakdek lehit kadesh. There's a pushback. Now comes the pushback. You've got to be kaddish. Befrat b'yom kaddish kazeh. Especially on a day like Shavuos. Shehumat and Torasenu. Shavuos is the day that you're going to play fast and loose with the mitzvah in the Torah. La'asot kinuach, you have to wipe out your mouth. The hadacha, you have to wipe your hands, you have to wipe your mouth. Clean it out, eat something between. Ulahafsig bebirkas hamazon, he says you have to bench. Interesting, the Mishnah Berurah said you didn't. He says no, you have to bench. Ulahamtin sha'a, and you have to wait an hour. That's going to make for something somewhat lengthened meal. Meaning you'll have your milchiks, and then you'll sit and drink a bit of whiskey, a bit of cognac, and you'll schmooze, and you'll, I suppose back in the day, maybe they smoked a cigar as well on Yontef, whatever, smoked a pipe, and then only an hour later, you can eat your fleishiks. V'achakav yifras mapa, and then you have to have a new tablecloth, mapa acheret, v'aruch shulchan abas, and then you can have your fleishiks. And he brings a nice remez. Here's a new one we haven't seen. The remez ledavar, and where's the hint? Reshit bikurei admat chatavi. You must bring your bikurim. Here he's talking about first fruits, but Shavuos is Yom HaBikurim. Beis Hashem Elokecha. Lo tevashel chala agedi b'chalevimo. In the same posik. Bring your bikurim, but don't eat milk and meat. She'in izha shelo yarvavam. U'mi shemit kadesh b'zeh b'yoteh kadosh yom ha'yom. Fine. The more kadosh you are on this, that's great. He brings the leniency of the Maharshal to the non-Jewish milkmaid can milk the milk. But he says, okay, you know, that's a leniency, but we try whenever we can. This wasn't really accepted. If you look at number 20, the Ber Hativ. The Ber Hativ appears on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, actually on the Mishnah Berurah as well. It's a collection of different poskim in Ashkenaz from the 17th through to the 19th century. And they bring down this halacha, number 20. So Ein Le'el, go and see this other siman. The chalav shenechla b'yomtzef al yidei akum yesh linhog bo issa. We don't drink milk that's been milked by a milkmaid on yomtzef. The Ein L'shanois, and we don't change that minag, ela b'yomtzef sheni. On yomtzef sheni we will yesh latira, fine. The chain has kamas hataz, that's the answer of the taz, the Magen Avram. I mistakenly wrote the shach in the English, it's the Magen Avram. Okay, the loka marashal, and we don't paskin like the marashal. Shehitir, who allows it, the milk on Yontzef for the fluden. The chain kasa b'tshuva aschot hashani, and he brings a tshuva. Also, the nachla shiva, and he brings a nachla shiva, which is a very famous posik. But, he says, v'siyim, but the nachla shiva ends, mikol makam, im hayiti b'makam shenogim heta, but if I went for Yontzef to a place where they did milk the cow, to make the fluden, I wouldn't say anything. I'd eat the cake. because I don't want to be machmer on people in that way. And then I brought you finally in number 21. He basically says the Yosef Omitz says, I don't really like it. He was minhagim in Frankfurt. He said some people eat milk and then meat, but he says I don't like it. Why? Because he holds you have to wait 6 hours between milk and meat. Okay, 6 hours. Now 6 hours you can't. Interesting. Between milk and meat, not between meat and milk. Between milk and meat. So he says basically we don't do this anymore because we're knowing. And now do people wait 6 hours between milk and meat? I've never seen anyone say, but apparently he says they did. And therefore, they either had milchiks, pure and simple, or fleishiks. Hard cheese, correct, but not for milk. He said, either we just have a parav dish cooked in a milchik pot, to be yotze, yeah, which is not really milchik, or we just have a milchik meal, or we just have a fleishik meal. But we don't do any of this kind of switcheroo. Okay, fine. So you see already lots of different minhagim. But he does talk about the minhag to make a challah, like a ladder, with 7 rungs. Just look at the end here. Va'al kopan in 3 lines from the bottom. Minhagenu la'asos mulita. We make something called a mulita. What's a mulita? I've never heard of a mulita other than here. Michalav or basar. You either made it from milk or from meat. Udimut sulam, and it's like a ladder. Misheva shalivot. Okay, it's a ladder with 7 rungs, etc. Zeichel shiva rakim. There's a zeichel for the 7 heavens. Shikara kodesh baruch hu b'shas matan Torah. Okay, so does anyone have ladder challah on Shavuos? All sorts of new things you can do the Shavuos. You can have some honey. You can have brioche. You can have fish cooked in butter. You can have a ladder challah, etc. Fine. Already by the 18th century, everybody's catching on and everybody's having milchiks. Even the Sfaradim, assuming they could digest it, they're having milchiks on Shavuos, and that became a widespread minhag. Interestingly, I didn't mention this, but the Samaritans also have milchiks on Shavuos. Now, why do the Samaritans have milchiks on Shavuos? They're for sure not Ashkenazi, and they didn't have anything to do with the Ashkenazim. So I'm not sure. It could be, one of the reasons is, that their Shavuos always falls on Sunday, by definition. Because they always have, that's one of the things that the Chazal talk about. They say, Mimacharata Shabbat is the day after Shabbat of the week, the Saturday, the Shabbos. So because milchiks, because they always have it on Shavuos, on Sunday, and they can't cook the day before, so what's left? They probably can't have meat, and they don't have, I don't know if that's a reason, but that could be one of the reasons. Or it could be they just once had an Ashkenazi visitor and they got very into it. I mentioned to you that when I went to see the Samaritans, I mentioned this I think last week, I asked them, do you have separate dishes for milchiks and fleishiks? And the guy looks at me, the Samaritan guy, Shomroni, and he says, like, what do you think I am, Reform? I said, of course I do. And I said to him, like, Lama, why do you have milchiks and fleishiks? There's nothing in the written Torah about milchiks and fleishiks. So I think quite a lot of the Samaritan minhagim have become merged and mixed in different ways, and they also buy tznuva yogurts. So ask your local Orthodox Samaritan. He told me he'd have to ask the Kohen Gadol, so ask the Kohen Gadol. Okay, quick fire, 10 minutes. 16, 17 reasons why we eat milchiks on Shavuos. So number one, honey and milk in Shir HaShirim. We saw that before, connection to Matan Torah. Number two, the hint in Bamidbar of chalav, as it were, in the psukim there to do with Shavuos. Number three, the gematria of 613 or 614, one off, etc. Number four, to bring Bikurim together with the prohibition of meat and milk, etc. Number five, here's a new one. David HaMelech died on Shavuos. I remember when I was a kid, I used to have a story about David HaMelech and how he died. You know, with the Malach HaMaves, had to distract him on Shavuos. So when the king dies, there's a halacha the country has to be oinonim, because we're all in mourning, and an oinon is also to eat meat. So we eat milchiks as a velus, as it were, for David HaMelech. Okay, very interesting. Chalav is gematria 40. That really does work. And 40 days is the number of days the Moshe went up Hasinai to get the Torah. Very good. Milk products are kept in simple clay, glass vessels. If you put them in silver and gold, they go off. It's not better, it's worse. So two Torah is better amongst Jews who are humble, who are modest. But if you've got a lot of money and you've got a lot of gaiva and you've got a lot of arrogance, then you're not going to be a Talmud Chacham. Okay? Number eight, the Brice at the end of Avos, 48 ways to acquire Torah. One of them is avoid self-indulgence. So instead of eating meat, we eat 15 different kinds of cheese on Yonzev. So maybe you shouldn't be self-indulgent. That's something to pull back on as well. Here's a reason brought in the Shach, in the Magen Avraham, excuse me. Look in number nine. Number 22, number 22, top of page 6. Chalav, says the Magen Avraham, Yesh harbeh ta'amim. There are many reasons. Matsati katuv, and I've seen written, hatam de'ita bezohar, a reason from the Zohar. She'oitzen zayin shvua, these 7 weeks that we've counted from Pesach, hayuli Yisrael shiva nekiyim, are like a purification of shiva nekiyim that a woman goes to before the mikveh. Dugma isha hamitara, who becomes tahor, minidata, from her nida, v'yadua shedam ne'ekav v'naseh chalav. And we have this idea, says the Zohar, that the blood of Pesach has become the milk of Shavuos. V'hainu midin l'rachamim. Now, I actually think that there's something real going on here. This is a real theme, not just like a gematria, which is kind of cute, but there's a real idea that the Gemara says that the when the mother is weaning, is nursing the baby, rather, the milk that the mother produces is made from the dam nida that she's not menstruating, and it's transformed into milk. Leaving aside the biology of this, which I'm not getting into right now, this idea of the transformation from bedamai chayif. You remember, Pesach is a very blood-oriented Yontif, which unfortunately was taken, the blood libels, etc. The Omar Lach, the Mai Chami, the Chayi, the Dam Mila, the Dam Pesach, and the Shavuos is the milk, which is the other side of that purification process. I actually think that's a very beautiful idea, and we need to think about that more. I brought you number 23, which is the famous one the Mishnah Berurah brings. That when they went to Har Sinai, they came down, so all their pots and pans were treif, because they were now Jewish, and they weren't Jewish before, so they couldn't make fleishiks, and they didn't have time, because it takes time to have to shecht, and all the meat they had before was treif, so they had to eat milchiks. This is, the Mishnah Berurah brings this down, in the name of Godel Echad. Why doesn't he give him a name? Well, maybe he didn't know who it was from, but the person it's from is actually the Baal Shem Tov, which is very interesting. It's Hasidish. So did the Mishnah Berurah have a reluctance to name Hasidish sources? Well, no. He names the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who's the Baal HaTanya. That's a halachic source. Maybe he didn't want to bring this because it was not a halachic source. But this is the reason that everybody's gunning for. Because there must be about 15 different reasons why this Midrashic idea doesn't really hold water. Number one, who says they weren't Jewish before Har Sinai? Maybe they were Jewish. Number two, who says they didn't eat meat at the time they had korbanos? They had the Zvachim from Har Sinai. Number three, according to many opinions, they didn't eat meat bichlal in the Midbar. They only ate korbanos. So why are they having a problem eating meat there? And I brought other reasons as well. There's a lot. And number four, did they have all the details of Shechita that comes in Dvarim? Who said? So whatever. It's the reason that people give. The Mishnah Berurah brings it. We have to give it some covered. But that's a reason that's brought. Number 11. Milk might have been treif to everybody as Yotzi Min Achai. We actually had a shiur on milk. If you remember that, we talked about all the weird forms of milk. Milk from men and milk from etc. Milk might be osa as yotze min achai. A non-Jew is not allowed to eat something that comes from a live animal. So if we were indeed non-Jewish before Sinai, maybe this was the first time we ever had milk. Okay, it's a nice idea. Avram Avinu. Now this is what I want to focus on for the last few minutes of the shiur. Avram Avinu serves the malachim milchiks and fleishiks. Number 24. Vayikach chema v'chalav uben bakar asher asa vayiten lifnehem. He takes butter, milk and meat, and he serves it to the Malachim. What's going on here? So have a look here in number 25. Says the Berahetiv, Shamati, I've heard a reason. She'ochlem chalav va'achakach basar. We eat milk and then meat. V'laika moishasa Malachim, because we're not like the Malachim. Etzel Avram, she'achlu basar b'chala, because they ate it together. And this all ties in with these, remember the Midrashim, that Malachim didn't want to allow Moshe to take the Torah, and therefore Moshe had to argue, and he says, this is a shtech to the Malachim. And we say to him, look, we're not like you. You eat meat and milk, we're even better than that. We eat milk, and then we're careful, and we wash out our mouth, and we change the cloth, and then we eat meat. So who should have the Torah? You, who don't even want to keep the Torah, or us, who are makpid on the Torah? Interesting reason. However, it cuts in different directions. Number 26, just have a look here for a second. So then he writes the Berahetiv. Katav Adoni Zikeni, I think that's who he's talking about, his grandfather. B'shem HaKolbo, de b'shvuas, yesh nogim le'echol gvina, there's a minag on shvuas to eat cheese, besudas mincha, in the afternoon meal. Now, on Yontif, you don't have to have Shalos Sudas. But they used to dafka have a cheese meal on the afternoon Shavuos, Af she'ein vav shals misuda shakras. Even though it's less than 6 hours since you had your meat meal. Now that's interesting. Who says that's okay? People who are keeping 6 hours between meat and milk. This is not milk to meat. This is meat to milk. They had fleishiks in the morning, and then they have cheese in the afternoon, and it's like, oh, what time is it? Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay. On Shavuos, we can be a little bit more lenient. Now, leaving aside whether you have to be a clock watcher generally for the 6 hours between meat and milk, that's a separate question. Of course, the Rambam says, kamo sheshaos, around 6 hours, ker sheshaos, excuse me. But I brought you in number 27, a piece that I recommend that you read over Shavuos from the Noam Elimelech. The Noam Elimelech is a Hasidic sorcerer of Elimelech of Lizhensk, and he says like this. He says exactly the opposite of what we just said. Normally speaking, a tzaddik can't eat meat and milk together. Why? Because meat represents gashmias, milk represents ruchnias, and when the tzaddik eats meat, by the tzaddik eating, he turns that physicality into spirituality on high. But the meat, as it were, is down here, and the chalav, as it were, spirituality is up there, and never the twain shall meet. But malachim, who are that combination already, and that's a very Kabbalistic idea, that malachim are kind of combined physical and spiritual, they don't have to be careful about that, because they're already that combination. So they can eat meat and milk together. That's why they ate with Avraham Avinu. And on Shavuos, where we're like malachim, we can be lenient like malachim and a little bit of fast and loose. God forbid, we're not going to eat meat and milk together, but we're going to just not look at the clock and we're going to have our cheese. It's really interesting. It's exactly pumfaket. It's the opposite of what we just heard, that he said you're more like a malach on Shavuos and therefore keep a little bit more lenient. By the way, the other Kabbalists say that you have to wait 24 hours between meat and milk. 24 hours. And there were those that did. And if people were doing that, then you know it's even more striking how they did this on Shavuos. Last three lines, five other reasons why you may eat cheese on Shavuos. Har Sinai is also called in Tehillim Har Gavnunim, and the word Gavnunim sounds like Gvina. Okay, fair enough. The land of Israel is praised as flowing with milk and honey, and Yom HaBikurim is a time when we remember Eretz Israel. Okay, on Shavuos, I like this one. On Shavuos, Moshe brought us the Torah, but Shavuos is Moshe Rabbeinu's due date. The Midrash says he was born 3 months premature. He was born on the 7th of Adar. He was meant to be born on Shavuos. So Shavuos is the day that his mother put him in the Nile because that's when they were expecting him due. Shavuos is the day that Batya found him. And he wouldn't milk from a non-Jewish nursemaid. So because he wouldn't milk from drink from a non-Jewish nursemaid, all these Midrashim all put together. So Shavuos is the day when Moshe didn't drink the milk. So today's the day we do drink the milk to remember Shavuos, okay? To remember Moshe. 16 milk is known to increase the sexual appetites. That's one of the reasons they wouldn't eat, like the Kohen Gadol have it before Yom Kippur. And when people separated before Matan Torah, they didn't eat milk. And now they can get together again after Matan Torah. So it's milk festival because we can celebrate our reunion. I left you some other things you can read as you see the sheets later. So I hope you don't mind that I couldn't resist doing this. But minhagim are very important, and what I want to look at in more focus after Shavuos, please God, is exactly how these minhagim work and play with halacha. What is the interface between minhag and halacha? How does that work? When minhagim are bad, when they're good, why they annoy some people, and why they're important. So let's leave it there. I wish you all a chag sameach. Enjoy all your culinary delights, and we'll speak after Shavuos.